Welcome to the Developer Tribe, where we delve into the process and practice of coaches, educators, and beyond. Today's episode, with International Mental Health Day on Sunday the 10th, is timely and is when our guest releases her new book. We talk about developing holistic health and, in particular, resilience. I hope you enjoy the episode, and as always, thanks for being here, however you got here. And with that, let's jump in. My guest today is a coach, mentor, and has a passion for well-being and resilience that drew her to the helping professions. Combining her previous journalism skills, she is also now an author, recently completing a book called Connected, The 12 Ways of Well-being for a Holistically Healthy Life, which will be released this Sunday, October 10th, World Mental Health Day. It's a pleasure to welcome to the pod Gemma Margerison. How are you doing?
Hi, I'm very well, thank you. How are you?
I'm good. What's been going on for you?
Just very busy trying to get everything ready for Sunday. We've got an in-person launch event, as well as it kind of being released online. So there's all sorts of frantic last-minute things being done for that.
I'm sure. Where is that? Where's the in-person, just in case anyone's able to go along?
So it's at Ribby Hall Spa and Village in Rear Green in Lancashire, and it's open to the public from 1 till 4 p.m., free entry. It's a wellbeing fair as well as a book launch, so people can come, walk around the stalls, hear different speakers, and of course, purchase the book.
Brilliant. Well, look, I mean, that sounds like a good fit. And I wanted really to start with where you began your career, your training as a journalist, before then moving on to coaching and mentoring. Can you tell us about how that came about and the career transition?
Yeah, so I studied creative writing and English lit as my undergrad degree, and decided that after I graduated, I was going to do 6 months around the world. I was going to find myself and decide what it was that I was going to do for the rest of my life, as you do very naively at 21 years old. So I set off. I had a sort of an itinerary planned for those 6 months. I did a month in Canada to start off with. Then I landed in New Zealand, and the idea was to do New Zealand, Australia, China, and then come back home. Unfortunately, or fortunately, depending on which way you look at it, I got off the plane in New Zealand and was like, hey, this is where I am supposed to be. So I cancelled all the rest of my flights. I phoned my parents and I was like, I don't know when I'm coming home. And I was there for 3.5 years. And that's where I got a job at a newspaper and started a career in journalism. It was a national paper, but a very small team. I had a really lovely editor who taught me everything that she knew. And so I went from kind of in my studies writing, you know, poetry to being a journalist and, you know, meeting sports people, politicians, activists, business people, you know, just really understanding story in a different way, but loving hearing those personal experiences from people. And I think that's where, you know, completely unbeknown to me, that's where coaching almost started, because I was like, hey, there's something in this idea of story and people's experience and being able to ask the right questions to pull that out of people. Yeah, when I got back to the UK in 2013, I did all sorts of jobs, worked in administration for local council, for local police, worked in learner support, did a lot of work with apprentices, and ended up at an engineering company. Working with their apprentices, And they kind of gave me the opportunity to research well-being, safeguarding, resilience in a little bit more depth. And I ended up delivering training around those particular areas. And they designed a role for me as the learner engagement and well-being coordinator. So I got to sort of support apprentices and graduates as my full-time role. Then in 2019, I started a doctorate in coaching and mentoring at Oxford Brookes, because I knew the part of the job that I enjoyed the most was the one-to-one work with the individuals. Again, kind of bringing some of those old, you know, journalism skills and characteristics through. And I started that course and I was like, oh my goodness, yes, this is what I'm supposed to be doing. Started to kind of develop a bit of a personal niche within the coaching skills that I was developing, and went full time in January 2020. Really had to put my money where my mouth was in terms of resilience and well-being and all of those other things that I've been, you know, banging the drum of for a while. But that's how that kind of career developed.
A very cool journey. And I mean, it sounds like there were maybe a couple of times where there were places you arrived at that just felt like the right fit. You know, you spoke of that of New Zealand and then later of Oxford and, you know, your doctorate. The reason I really wanted to speak to you here was, you know, that understanding and that knowledge that you have around resilience in particular. You know, we had a previous discussion of it before, which I really enjoyed. And sometimes in sport, that as a term gets misinterpreted or sometimes lost in other terminology like grit, determination, mental toughness, or a football favorite of bounce back ability. So look, help us get a real sense of a definition of resilience from your perspective.
The kind of bounce back concept is one that kind of really pushes my buttons, I think, in terms of resilience. For me, the ability to bounce back is about recovery. So it is something has happened that we need to recover from. Whereas for me, resilience is, how do we potentially stop that thing happening in the first place? How do we work in a preventative space? And it all kind of stems from my own personal experiences. So I was diagnosed with PTSD in 2015, and I absolutely hit rock bottom, probably have been in, you know, some of the darkest places that you could imagine going. And coming back from that is my recovery journey. That's what I kind of talk about it as, and reaching a place of personal recovery. But when I look back at that journey, there are skills that I could have developed that would have enabled me to respond to the situations I faced differently, that perhaps would have prevented me from going to that rock bottom place. Does that make sense?
No, it does. And my question is going to be then, and look, firstly, you know, thank you for offering some of your personal experience there. But my first question is going to be, okay, well, if resilience is something that can be learnt, then, which is what you're suggesting, my issue is, it sounds a little bit catch-22, that almost you need to experience certain difficulties, perhaps, in order to then exercise resilience. but that you also need to have had that experience to have the ability to be resilient. There feels like there's a catch 22 there.
I hope not. I'd like to think that the way that, so because I've had those experiences and I've had this kind of understanding of the things that I could have done differently or things that I wish I'd understood, my hope is that by passing those on to other people, that they therefore don't have to experience those things. And I think that's that kind of then highlights the difference between prevention and recovery. I'm not doing this because, you know, while I do a lot of work in post-traumatic recovery, my main goal isn't necessarily in terms of resilience to help you bounce back or to help you recover. The aim is to arm you so that you don't have to go through those things.
Okay. Yeah, no, I get it. So talk to us a little bit, I guess, without giving away too much of, you know, some of those tools, some of those things that you are, I want to say teaching, you know, correct me if you think that's an incorrect term to use, but teaching others in order to be, I guess, more aware of how to be resilient.
Yeah, and it's really interesting you should say that, because self-awareness is one of the big, one of the four. So the first is self-care, then it's self-awareness, then it's self-acceptance, and then it's self-empowerment. So that's the kind of process that I teach or coach with, that I am hoping to develop around my own sort of research and reading as well. Because I think if we can understand who we are, understand what makes us tick, what our strengths are, what triggers us, and understand how we can use those when we hit periods of difficulty or when things come up that kind of shake us a little bit. Once we have that core identity, that core strength to hold on to, I think it makes it a lot easier for us to recognize when things are a little bit shaky and do something about it, before we reach a point of, well, actually, your illness is forcing you to do something about it.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. I mean, my own personal experience of something that was very traumatic, my responses to it were very visceral, were very physical. I mean, in my case, I was pretty mute for a while. You know, that was one way in which I was dealing with it. And I can't remember having an awareness of what me as myself was doing at that time.
Mm-hmm.
I was very disconnected from it.
Yeah.
So how do you support people who are brand new to this kind of concept to start to understand that, to use the phrase from your book, you know, that connectedness between our own understanding of ourselves and actually then how we can manage situations that we need to be resilient in?
Yeah, I always come back to self-care. It for me, it's the absolute foundation of everything. If you can understand what you do to take care of yourself or how you could improve that and start to put some of those things in place, it just gives that kind of just that basic foundation of strength and personal knowledge, and from that you can start to then unpick some of the rest of it. So for example, if you are a very creative person and your self-care looks at, perhaps it's colouring or crocheting, and I'm giving those examples because they're the things that work for me. Then you can start to unpack that with, okay, so creativity is something that you use as part of your self-care. What strengths come out of that? What does it tell you about yourself? Actually, I can think outside the box. I can follow instructions in terms of a crochet pattern. I can come up with new ideas. And once you have those kind of strengths on the table, it's okay. So if I came up against a challenging situation, how might I use those? And it all just comes from exploring your self-care strategies. And they then sort of open the door to that kind of broader discussion around your individual resilience sort of makeup. And this is where the connected book is a bit of a tool, because I look at sort of 12 different areas of well-being, and it might be that people go, oh yeah, those are the ones that I do really well with, and those are the ones that either I struggle with or I don't really value very highly. And again, it just helps to start off those conversations around who you are as an individual and what works for you.
That sounds excellent. I mean, I look forward to seeing the book. And I guess now my question becomes, because I'm now thinking about the conversations that I have regularly with coaches of this concept of resilience, that the main thing as coaches that we want to see from our work with our players and athletes is their ability to be resilient in the moment.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm hearing from you that resilience isn't something that perhaps is developed in the moment. It's developed away from that performance. So how do we take those things like you've described as, you know, self-care, so things that I might do away from the performance environment? How do you take those and push them towards when I actually have to perform?
So I think it's about learning those skills so that you have a little toolkit with you for those moments where you go, oh, okay, I'm facing this situation. What have I got in my bag that I can pull out and use here? Is it actually what I need to do in this moment is a little bit of spiritual well-being, a little bit of being in the present. Oh, okay, what have I learned about being in the present? Okay, I'll just do a quick counting down from five breathing exercise just to help to ground me in this moment. Or is it, I'm facing a particular situation where, coming back to the creativity element, is that actually this tough situation in this moment requires a little bit of problem solving. Okay, how can I use my creativity here, look at things in a slightly different way, come at it slightly out of the box? So by arming yourself with those tools away from that situation, where you're in a good state of mind to be able to learn them. I don't know about you, but if I'm in a high panic, situation, trying to take on new skills or new information is practically impossible. Whereas if I've already got it in my bag, something that's already learned, then you can just roll it out.
Yeah, I really like that. I think there was a situation a long time ago where I was working with a player that would very often have some problems with the performance environment, was a very good footballer in training and then couldn't quite transfer that into the game, consistently at least. Mm-hmm. But this particular player was very creative on the ball. And we came to an understanding of, look, when you're struggling like that, you know, try something else, try something different. Yeah. So I really like that you've spoken about maybe using some creativity there. I mean, that obviously won't work for everyone, but that's not the point here, is it? As you've said there, all of those four that you described start with self. So it's understanding ourselves, and then if we're working with them, doing our best to understand them. So how do you, as a coach and a mentor then, if you're working with someone around resilience, how do you help them go through these four things?
I literally do them a session at a time. So in my kind of blocks of coaching, I do kind of a 30-minute intro, let's get to know each other. Then the first 4 weeks are self-care, self-awareness, et cetera, and then the last one is, okay, what have we learned? What are we going to take forwards? Having those kind of review discussions. So I am as blatant as that about the kind of structure that we use. And it works really well. Obviously, it's very, very personal to the individual in terms of what topics come out within those sections. But there's also that structure there for people to feel safe with.
Yeah. Yeah, no, that sounds good. So what kind of journeys do you take with the client? And because I suppose one of the things that I've ended up discussing a lot with coach developers, particularly when they're working with coaches one-to-one, is how close do we get to their life? And I suppose I do mean literal physical proximity, but also just, you know, emotionally, mentally, how close and how familiar do we become with those, their lives? Is there a point at which you realize you're almost too close or too far away? Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. It does make sense. And I think, you know, there's a lot of, you know, boundaries to be aware of as a coach in any kind of, you know, field, whether that's in sport or in mental health or whatever kind of area that you're dealing with. I think the most important thing for me in terms of respecting that boundary and keeping within those boundaries is it's always about moving forwards. I think for me, when you start going back into the past, you start bringing up some of those old kind of feelings or situations, that's quite dangerous ground to be in, particularly with the people that I've worked with who've been through significant trauma. So I think for me, as long as we are continually moving forwards, it gets as close as it needs to. And I think you can judge that individually, but you've always got to be mindful of where are we going? What's the end goal here? And for me, ultimately, the end goal is for my coachee or my client to reach a point of independence where they can do all this stuff without me. That's always what we're aiming towards.
That's interesting. Almost making yourself obsolete.
Yes.
Yeah. But that's the genuine aim. And so obviously your role will be slightly different to certainly myself and probably a lot of the people listening, in terms of you will be dealing with some really personal topic. Mm-hmm. And as you said, you know, maybe some trauma, maybe some personal issues that would go way beyond my training and the people that I work with. That being said, you know, sometimes difficult things can come up. Are there moments where, as a coach, as a mentor, how do you, I was going to say bracket, and that's not quite the right word, that, you know, almost put certain things aside that are your own personal thoughts, your own transferences. How do you notice those, perhaps put them aside, maybe acknowledge them, in order to then really help the individual that you're working with?
Yeah, and I think, again, it's using my own resilience structure of, okay, this is affecting me, perhaps. How do I need to take care of myself in this situation? How do I need to take care of the other person in this situation? Am I aware of how I'm feeling, how I'm acting? If things might be different, am I sat here and my heart's beating a little bit faster? Am I staying present in the conversation? Or are my thoughts starting to wander to, you know, parts of my own life? So again, it's using some of those techniques to be able to stay focused. And I think one of the things that has helped me the most is having either supervision or peer support. There have been numerous times where I've come off coaching sessions and have, you know, picked up the phone to somebody and said, you know, this has, you know, hit something or triggered something in particular for me, or this is something that I, you know, perhaps would just like a second opinion on. Did I do the right thing in this situation? And just being able to have that, you know, support with other coaches is really important, not just to make sure that I'm okay, but also to make sure that I'm always doing the right thing for my clients, and just that little bit of almost accountability as well as personal support. So for me, it's been able to recognize myself, what I'm doing, am I continuing to be you know, professional, and then having that personal support there as well.
So important, isn't it? If you're working with people in supporting their development in any way, that actually if you're unwell for whatever reason, that it's going to be a lot harder to actually help them. And so we do have to be cognizant of it. Is there ever a space where you might make that clear to the person that you're working with, that I have my own coping mechanisms, I have my own self-care techniques, at some points I may need to exercise those?
Yeah, I can't think of a situation at the moment where it's come up, where I've had to kind of say that to a client in terms of what's come out of the session. In that moment, I think having done this for a while, it's harder to shock me than I perhaps first thought. I can actually, you know, have been able to deal with things that have sort of come out of the blue. But I've, you know, there have been moments within coaching sessions where, you know, depending on the client and the relationship that you have, I can say, well, this has worked for me. What do you think? And using that again, just to start off those conversations. So there are kind of moments in sessions where I'll share parts of my personal story or parts of my recovery journey or things that I've learned, because, you know, it's important for them to know that you're a person too. But also, you know, obviously that's very much dependent on the relationship that you have and making sure that that's going to keep them safe as well.
No, that's an excellent answer. Thank you. And I wanted to then move on to the self-awareness piece. This is something that I'm really interested in. Again, forgive me, from a sports coaching perspective, but it's amazing how often, and I would have to say I was the same in my early parts of my career, that I would put myself to the side and go and be coach.
Mm-hmm.
And I did that for years until, you know, really realizing that I actually needed to bring myself with me in order to be a more effective coach. But then when you're working with people and they maybe haven't had that prompt or support to start that journey of some self-awareness, because of course it is a massive journey, it's not a destination, there's quite often that initial block that we would experience in trying to help someone develop that, despite the fact that they may have even come to you for exactly that help. How what are your strategies for starting to, you know, pick at the surface of that and help the person get to that place themselves, because we can't do it for them?
Yeah, I always find values is a really good place to start with self-awareness. I think it's one of those where it's not too personal, it's not too invasive to kind of talk about the things that are important to you. But actually, when you explore somebody's personal values, they tell you an awful lot about, you know, who you are and why you do what you do and how you ended up where you are. Because whether we realize it or not, our values play a massive role in the kind of jobs that we take, the kind of careers that we pursue, the kind of studies that we do, the people we spend time with, our hobbies and interests. And so you can have quite a light conversation, I think, about values and how personal values and organizational values interact. But in terms of self-awareness, that can give you an awful lot to work with. What kind of situations would align to your values? What kind of situations wouldn't? How would you deal with those? And, you know, then starting to bring out some of that deeper personal resilience side from having those very kind of gentle initial conversations.
Yeah, I can see that working. I was, you know, whilst you were speaking, I was thinking about, you know, do I know mine? Am I clear on what those are? And again, that those would change, right? I think that sometimes it became very popular to have a coaching philosophy a year, 2 years ago. You know, suddenly, at least from my perspective, everyone had to have a coaching philosophy. You had to know exactly what your values and your principles were. And I think that something that had gone missing in the interpretation of those prompts, which I think was needed, was that they could change and they could adapt or they could move. You know, it was almost presented as if decide what they are and then that's you as a coach for the rest of your career. You know, it seemed to miss the really important part of saying these may well be your values right now, but let's start to work with them and find out whether they definitely are, whether there's any that you just think they are. You know, maybe you're saying them because they are parental influences, societal influences. It might even be you're telling me that one because you think that's what I want to hear. You know, right? Get that a lot. So again, if you get a sense that some of the values that someone has put forward to you, if you get a sense that that's not them, that doesn't fit, I'm guessing that you're not going to say that outright. Maybe you are, but I'm guessing you're not going to say that outright. So how do you sort of gently move someone towards an understanding of that one maybe isn't quite right?
Yeah, so I think I probably have the conversation around evidence. So if somebody was to look at your life right now, how would that evidence what you say your values are? You know, if somebody says that they value family, but your actual amount of time willingly spending time with your family is very small, then either there's something there that needs to be, there's obviously something that doesn't quite match up there, and again, it's kind of opening those conversations. But I think I would say the evidence, or how is that reflected in your life, is probably how I would start to just dig a little deeper with those.
Sure. And becoming more clear on those values, principles, whatever you want to call them, is that something then that links directly back into this sense of resilience in the moment? You know, if I'm clearer on who I am, why I do the things I do in the way that I do them, are those things that then you're able to draw on consciously in the moment as you're doing things?
Yeah. So, I'm trying to think of an example, but it's all about building a sense of identity. And as I said, values play a huge part in what we do and why we do it. And even if that's just the first step in understanding what our kind of broader identities are, then again, it's an important tool to have. Even if you look at it from kind of a job perspective, just as an example, I very much value, as I said, creativity, personal freedom, independence, all of those kinds of things. And so when it comes to the self-care, making the right decisions about what kind of role I want to take, looking at value statements and visions of the kind of companies or organizations to work with, that's going to have an impact
in that process of trying to develop our own identities. And then of course we as coaches are supporting that and trying desperately at times not to put our own stuff on that. We're only able to do that and consistently be that identity if we are healthy. So let's bring that back around to the book and the 12 ways of well-being. I obviously don't want you to give away the 12, but tell us a little bit more about the book and how that was put together.
Yeah, so the idea for the book came from looking at what I call the four spheres of connection. So what do I need to have in order to live a kind of well-rounded, healthy life? I got a lot of people kind of talking to me about well-being as sort of diet and exercise, which is great, but there are so many other things that influence and impact our well-being as a whole. So there were sort of these 12 ways of well-being, 12 different areas that I kind of thought made up a holistically well life. And I realized that while I had clients that were coming to me to discuss any of those 12 things, while I was able to coach them using kind of questioning and those kinds of techniques, I didn't have any in-depth knowledge of each of those 12 areas. I'm not a financial expert. I'm not a nutritionist or a personal trainer. And so what I wanted to do was to put together something that was a cross between a self-help book and a well-being directory. So something that gave people the tools to make improvements to one area or several areas or all 12 areas of well-being if they wanted to, but also to have people that they could reach out to for support who were experts in that particular area if that's what they felt that they needed. So I started to talk to people that I knew within my kind of well-being network and their well-being network and their well-being network. And so the book has 45 contributors to it, right from, you know, as I said, nutritionists, personal trainers, right through to artists, writers, musicians, talking about their own personal journeys into how they started doing what they're doing, their information, advice and guidance around how to improve your well-being in that particular area, but then also allowing them to publish their contact details as well. So if somebody read the financial well-being chapter and said, you know what, actually, I am really struggling with my mortgage or insurance, there's somebody here that I can get in touch with to perhaps help me through that. So it was very much a collaboration in terms of kind of bringing all of that knowledge together and helping people to make those changes to their own well-being.
Superb. I mean, it must have been tough at times to bring that all together into one publication. So congratulations for managing to do that. Was there a single or a couple of threads that just appeared to emerge consistently, regardless of the particular part of well-being that these people were talking about?
Yeah. So The physical health part of it, very, very important. You know, as I said, the self-care, very much sort of foundational to well-being and resilience. So that came up quite a lot. And also being present came up a lot as well throughout the book as a consistent theme. So being able to just you know, be grounded in the moment and understand your experience right there, rather than kind of you know, either burying your head in the sand with it and distracting yourself or taking things away and having lots of worries and thoughts going on in your head, is just allowing yourself to experience, you know, whatever's there in front of you, whether it's particularly good or particularly bad, and being able to manage it.
Yeah, well, thank you for being present today and giving us as much of that information as you can, without obviously giving away too much. And you know, all the details of your book will be in the descriptions and so on. So good luck with the launch. I'm sure it will go really well. I always ask a question of each of the people, the guests I bring on, and that is, if you could have an audience with just one person, who would you choose?
Oh, gosh. I would probably say Robin Williams, somebody that I had a really great admiration for, but somebody who obviously had quite a tragic element to his story. And I would love to, you know, just to kind of dig in a little bit as to how he kind of managed and the way that he was able to continue to make other people smile. I think there'd be that would probably be mine.
Be an interesting conversation for sure. Gemma, thank you so much for your time today. If anyone wanted to reach out, what's the best way to do it?
So probably best getting hold of me via email. So it's Gemma with a G, GemmaLouiseCoaching@gmail.com.
Brilliant. Thanks again. And just leaves me to say, welcome to the tribe.
Thank you very much.
That's it for episode 11 of season 3, and our thanks to Gemma for joining and giving us insight into her perspectives on holistic health and resilience. As we mentioned in the episode, Gemma is releasing her book on Sunday the 10th, so take a look at the links in the description to this pod for some more details to that publication. And to stay in touch with us, come join us at thedevelopertribe.mn.co to journey freely and loyally towards effective coaching and coach development practice. I look forward to seeing and connecting with you there, and of course, back with the final episode of this season next week.